Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist. The Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee with our head coach, Chad Timmerman.
Hey, everybody.
Our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And our last special guest, maybe. Who knows if a random podcast will pop up, but I think this is the last special guest from Kona that we'll have with us, Mike Stanek. Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Close enough.
Perfect.
Stanek.
Okay, awesome. Good to have you here. We're excited to have you. You are a unique Kona qualifier. So we've been talking to like Kona qualifiers this whole week. You qualified. I guess that before we get into why you're unique, you should state where you qualified and what your splits were.
Sure. So I have all this stuff memorized.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at a phone.
Yeah.
So I qualified at Boulder this year in June.
Got it. Okay.
My swim was 102.56.
Okay.
The bike, 448.10. And then the run was a 3:42.
Awesome. So, yep. And how old are you?
31.
So you're in the 30,
just turned 31.
30 to 35 or 30 to 39?
30 to 34.
Yeah, that's your age group.
That's interesting. Every person here swam right around an hour. Mm-hmm. That seems like if you can swim that, you can qualify. All the pros and the top age groupers can go 48, 49.
Mm-hmm. Right? Crazy.
I know, crazy. 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But you don't need it because it's an Ironman.
Yeah, exactly. How long have you been going about doing this Ironman thing?
Yeah, so my first Ironman was in 2015. I did Texas back then. That's really when the whole Ironman thing started, the whole long course thing. I've been doing triathlons for about 10 years now.
Okay.
I did my first one in 2008, actually. And that was just kind of for to see if I can do it kind of thing. Chicago was my first one.
Yeah.
So I was working at a bike shop at the time. I worked at a small family-owned bike shop called Cycles and Sports, which is long gone now. Because just the industry has just changed so much. But when I was there, I was heavily involved in BMX and just hated road bike riders in general. I mean, people coming in spandex is just like so weird.
What'd you think about triathletes?
Same thing.
Yeah, same. Not worse? Same level.
No, they weren't worse. I think road bike, just strictly road cycles were the worst.
That's why people have the shirts to say, don't be such a roadie. It's a thing for sure, right?
So I did that and like I just kind of wanted to get a fixie just to ride to and from the shop. Figured, you know, save gas. And I got one, and within like probably maybe 3 hours of riding, I was like, all right, I need something more. I need a road bike. And I got that and then did some rides, got some rides under my belt, and just kind of wanted to keep on going further and further and further. So,
here we are.
Yeah.
So you started out in BMX.
Correct. Yeah.
That's an interesting one. I don't see a whole lot of like in mountain biking. You see that pretty regularly, like people that start out with BMX. But you don't see that a whole lot in triathlon. When did you start that?
Oh, God. I started BMX when I was probably 4 or 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really young.
You know what?
Yeah?
So can we
segue? Yeah, let's do it.
Let's talk about his claim to fame first.
Yeah, that's true. BMX claim of fame. You told me this, and I Googled it, and I saw it. You did a backflip over Mario Lopez, didn't you? That's correct.
Yeah.
From Saved by the Bell.
So if people don't know,
cool. He's Slater. Yeah.
Slater from Saved by the Bell.
I'd like to think I'm probably the only person on this planet has ever backflipped over Mario Lopez. And what's even better...
Or ever will,
yeah. Well, maybe. Maybe now they might have to...
Someone's going to just run behind him, be like, Mario, duck!
Yeah, backflip. Yeah. But the best part about that, if you look at the photo, is he's like wearing a blue or purple velvet jumpsuit. Like,
it's pretty impressive.
It's hilarious.
Can we put that in forum.trainerow.com?
We will absolutely do it.
Is there a video?
I have some video.
Oh, can we put the video?
Autograph.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. So did you do BMX racing?
I did not. No, just because where I grew up, like southwest suburbs of Chicago, the closest BMX racetrack was Rockford, and that was like an hour and 45 minutes away, or there was some in Indiana, but there was nothing too close. I mean, and even too, like when I was growing up, there was no skate parks that were around. Nowadays, every single city has a local skate park because the government gets involved and they build some prefab stuff. But when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, it was literally just grabbing a tire stop that my dad had because he's a car mechanic in the garage. And we'd take some plywood from some houses that were getting built in the neighborhood and just kind of stack things up and just ride on the block, see how far you can jump. And then by the time I started doing it, you know, like on a semi-professional or professional basis, the skate park scene was just completely blown. Crazy.
So did you race when you were older?
I did some races, yeah.
But it was primarily freestyle BMX.
Primarily just the skate park stuff, Dirt competitions, skate park stuff.
That's a totally... Do you feel like that helps you at all in triathlon in any way?
Yeah, it's something we were kind of talking about a little bit. I mean, it's not road bike or triathlon specific, but I think just turning the pedals and having that constant, you know, push for so many years, I think that that's, you know, added up, and that is a cumulative stress throughout the years.
Yeah.
And two, probably
the coordination.
Yeah. Descending from Javi.
Yeah.
In the aero bars probably does not scare you.
No.
No, exactly. Right.
Exactly.
80% of the people here, it scares them.
Yeah. The man's backflipped Mario Lopez. A little wind isn't going to throw him off.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a little bit in the back of your head that's, you're kind of scared because you don't know the road conditions. You don't know if there's going to be something on the ground. I mean, if it was completely just perfect roads, I'd go to town on that thing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be like, I think that's so triathletes don't necessarily need a ton of bike handling skill, right? Compared to something that like a criterium racer. But I still think that they need more. Yeah, they do. Yeah. Yeah. On general, you could say that.
Yeah.
But I think that it's a big stress component too, right? Like handling your bike is just adds stress for people.
Just
like
being relaxed on the bike.
Well, and descending too, like triathlons, a lot of triathletes, they can lose. Just today, we did a very steep descent. I touched the brakes a couple times and then I had to bridge back to you.
Yeah.
And it was, I had to do so many watts to bridge back to make up that amount of time.
Just from a couple touches.
Just a couple touches. Yeah. And it was touches because I didn't want to go 50 miles per hour because I have fear. But
yeah.
That's something Lionel actually talked about relatively recently is the fact that he lost a lot of time, I think, in Oceanside earlier in the year to Jan when he was descending through these turns, these technical turns. He was losing a ton of time. Mm-hmm. And I think, it could definitely help.
Yeah. Yeah,
it won't hurt, that's for sure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, until it does hurt a ton. But it's mostly in your head.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's fear.
So let's go into your power to weight.
Yeah.
Do you have another point?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
We haven't had a podcast since this. This isn't going to be about triathlon.
Yeah.
Jonathan and I took our kids to BMX.
It's true.
Racing.
Okay.
And Jonathan and I want to race BMX.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
So
I want to badly.
I want to really badly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask a couple questions. First, BMX as a kid, I've got a 4 and a 7-year-old, and Jonathan has a 2-year-old.
Yep.
Yep, on a Strider bike.
Yeah. Those things are sweet. I bought one for my niece.
Yeah.
She loves it. Yeah.
A full face helmet, and then we're getting them kind of like body armor and long pants because they fall a lot.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions on like getting your kids into BMX or things what we should try to do?
I mean, from like your standpoint, there's many different classes that you can potentially race. And one thing that I've done before, I've taken people's cruisers out there. And I think that's just, it's so fun.
It's a bigger wheel size, right?
Bigger wheel size. Yeah. I think they're 24s,
yeah.
But it's just so fun. It's just completely different racetrack when you're going on a BMX bike versus a cruiser.
Yeah.
So that's fun. And it might even be easier introduction to racing is to do an actual cruiser. From a kid standpoint, there's most of the tracks now, they have Strider races.
Yeah, they did this one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's awesome because, I mean, that takes a huge fear out of the kids when they're able to just roll the courses, then they learn how to pedal, and it's nothing, it's easy.
Yeah.
So.
So I was going to race it on a Specialized P3, which for triathletes. And
it's a 26-inch dirt jump bike, basically. Yep.
Yeah. And it has a...
And it
would be in the cruiser class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then... I think what bike would you do? You want to go on your mountain bike, don't you?
Yeah, I'm actually going to stick to 29-inch wheels to keep it all the same, which reportedly, from what I hear, you can do that. It's just you have to race in like basically a different division.
Sure. Right? I don't know the rules of BMX racing.
Yeah, yeah.
And something now like 29ers relatively new, so they probably have a class for that now. But I would also probably just do for the first couple races, or if you can get some time on the track, put some flats on.
Yeah, okay.
Don't clip in.
Okay, why?
Okay, you're going to get bumped off your bike and then you're going to put your helmet to use.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting, right? Like for us, and this is a huge diversion from triathlon, but...
Is it still bike?
But yeah, still bikes. So there's this big misconception, I think, that's out there that if you ride clips, it's because you don't know how to ride flats. And how to ride flats is basically meaning that you know how to properly jump your bike. You aren't lifting up with your feet because they're clipped in.
Mud hopping.
Yeah, exactly. But you actually, you know, flats force you to learn proper riding technique in terms of how to put leverage on your bike, get off the ground, that sort of thing, right?
Sure.
But it is, that doesn't mean that that's the case across the board, right? Like you can still ride clipped in. Like Aaron Gwynn rides clipped in. I think he's okay on flats. Like he's like the downhill world champ, right?
Yeah.
Like he can figure it out. But as I understand, I think there's a rule that you have to ride flats
in this place.
Yeah, when you start out, at least for I think it's the ABA or whatever else.
I would have to say, I don't know, because all the times that I've raced, I was in flats.
You always ran flats.
Yeah. And this was before I even knew about road bikes or, you know, had a road bike at all and never even tried clipping in. So I was racing, every single person I was racing, they were clipped in. You know, there's obviously a speed advantage when you're taking off out of the gate, that initial boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
They always were probably 2-3 bike lengths off the gate. But then I'd eventually get them on the jumps because I was so good at jumping and manualing these rollers and going on the berms and everything like that.
Which you can do clipped in.
Of course.
But your skill is what was really getting you ahead.
It's a skill, yeah.
I guess you can say that.
Yeah. What I'm worried about is I've done like 12 years now clipped in.
Yeah.
And then I get it without being clipped in and I start to try to pedal and I could lose.
Your feet are coming off.
For sure.
Yeah. A kid there slipped a pedal, broke his collarbone. Yeah. Week before, kid slipped a pedal, broke his arm.
Yeah.
Like, I won't slip a pedal. So I don't.
Yeah.
It's like I have such a history. If I was brand new, yes, but I have such a history like of expecting to be able to pull up with my feet when I pedal.
Yeah. I can see how that would throw you off a little bit. But also, too, the race type of flats, you know, the pedals.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the same thing for like a mountain bike, right? Yeah, but they have like Kruppi, for instance, makes some pedals and you screw in. It's a little, looks like a screw with a hex head.
Yeah.
And you screw those in for the grips and they stick out by like, you know, 2-3 millimeters.
And then you have shoes that are specifically made for flats.
And then, like a pair of Converse. Those are really flat and grippy.
Yeah.
Those two together, it's like a magical combination. Yeah.
Get some 510s, and the 510s actually have like rubber that's specifically designed for flats, you know? Like,
You hope you don't slip a pedal. Because if you look at my shins are just nothing but scars all about.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
I'm like,
it's going to happen.
Price of admission.
Well, it won't if I'm clipped in.
You might just land on your head. So,
okay, we can go back to triathlon.
Back to try. Your power to weight ratio.
Do we have to?
Yeah, I know. Okay. I know, right?
That's fine.
Power to weight ratio.
4.26.
Okay, so where's your weight at and where's your wattage at?
148, and FTP is about 292 right now.
So 148 pounds. I'm going to do some quick math and figure that out.
And I think out of all of our guests, you have the highest power to weight. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
And you had the fastest bike split too.
Yeah.
I know it's power to aerodynamics, but there's still...
Yeah.
I mean, usually the smaller, the less you weigh, the lower your CDA, your drag is too.
67 kilograms.
Talk aerodynamics then.
Sure.
For those that want to,
I mean, and also the Boulder course was, there were some hills on it. So I guess power to weight comes into play in that situation.
It does here too. Like it's good to have a high threshold to push against that wind.
Yeah.
It'll definitely come against you.
And the whole road up to Javi, I mean, that's basically a climb all the way out.
Yeah, it's lumpy. It really does matter. And it's sustained in some cases where it's just kind of dragging for a long time. So it really does. It does matter. Kona is not as flat as people think, you know, that's for sure. When you first started out in triathlon, were you just naturally already like high watt kg? Was that normal? I don't know how early you started training with power, but.
I started training power probably like 2015.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think the first test I did was maybe 3.4 watts per kilo.
Yeah. So you were already pretty high.
3.4.
It's already very good fitness.
Sure.
Yeah.
Prior to, you know, other than BMX, did you ever do any running or swimming or anything else?
No swimming outside of having to do it in gym class like once and just doing the doggy paddle just to get the test done. I grew up playing sports my whole life. And then in high school, I played soccer, wrestling, and baseball. So there was a component of running for conditioning for those sports. I hated it. And even like thinking about the kids that were doing track and just running to run was just, I couldn't comprehend that. It just seemed so painful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean... I played sports. So I guess that helped a little bit.
What about, so was the swimming or running, which one was harder to get down, which had the steeper learning curve for you?
Swimming, definitely.
Huh.
Yeah, swimming, definitely.
Why was it difficult?
Just because it's so technical. I mean, you can have a huge aerobic engine. You can take guys that run, and there's be plenty of age groupers this weekend that are running under 3 hours, right? Mm. Which is huge.
It's crazy.
Yeah, very crazy. I mean,
there's it's a impressive on its own.
Yeah, exactly. Running a standalone marathon under 3 hours is crazy, but you're going to do it after this course, a swim and a bike. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pros who can barely squeak by a 3 hour marathon off the bike, but there's a lot of age groupers that will do it. And you'll find that some of them, or most all of them, will be around that hour. And there's a big difference between swimming 48, like the big main pack of the pros, and swimming that hour. It's 12 minutes. It's huge. And a lot of that isn't aerobic fitness. It's technicality. It's, you know, your body position in the water, where your hips are, and how well you glide through the water. So every aspect of swimming is it's more technical than anything. So
I've noticed it too with swimming. I very rarely you see someone go from like start swimming to swimming at 48. They always did it or like, you know, like low 50s.
Come from a swim background.
Yes. Kids, high school, college. Where running or biking, like you can see someone come into cycling and like 2 years in, they're like 5.2, 5.3 watts really per quickly. Kilo. Yeah.
That's weird. Yeah.
So it's just, but it's the technicality aspect.
Yeah, that's why. It's like time in the pool. Mm-hmm. How many yards do you have in your life?
Yeah.
You kind of talked about it with rotating the pedals, which does help too, but it's even more exaggerated with...
If you talk to or hear of a lot of the pros that have made significant jumps, a lot of these guys that are going from either the second pack to first pack swimming, et cetera, or even the pros in general, I mean, they're not doing age group yardage per week. They're not doing 10,000 or 15,000. Like, they're swimming almost 10K a day, and that's what they're doing. So they're getting that time in the pool. I mean, I'm sure Lucy Charles talked about how she used to swim 100K almost a week. Now, because she's a triathlete and everyone else is so much slower, she tones it down a little bit. She does make maybe 30K, but it's definitely time in the pool. You're just developing that muscle memory and that stroke.
Lionel Sanders said he's been swimming 25K per week since January.
Yeah.
Which is legit.
That's ridiculous.
I remember before, though, someone saying, I think it was on Slow Twitch, you're not a swimmer until you have a 70K swim week.
Ugh. I will never be a swimmer, ever.
Yeah, right?
Ever.
Crazy.
I don't want to be.
How'd you improve your... we talked about the technicality of swimming.
Yeah.
How did you go about improving your technicality?
Lots of YouTube videos. And I think one of the biggest things that I've done is, with my brother here, we did some video analysis in the pool. Because what you think you're doing and what you think you look like, it's just... It looks horrible. Yeah. I mean, you think you're fluid. You think your stroke looks great. You think your strokes per minute's high. And you look at it, you're like, what? That's not me. Who is
terrible.
That? Yeah, it looks like garbage. It looks like absolute garbage. So that was huge. And then you could just see these little subtleties, like, oh, my hand's drifting out to the side. You know, my elbow's dropping a little bit. I'm not extending. I'm not going past my hip. So I'm losing out a lot on that. And every single one of these little components adds up. These are these tiny fractions or, you know, percentiles that add up. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, I think now, I wouldn't say I'm fast now, but I definitely made improvements. The first time I hopped in a pool and I couldn't even swim 25 yards, it'd be like 100 in maybe almost 2 minutes. And now I could pretty much like cruise like an easy aerobic effort at around like a 118, 120.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's for 100 meters, you said?
Yeah, 100 yards. Yards. 100 yards.
So how many yards, what pace can you hold 10 100s on?
With how much rest?
Anything you want.
120.
120
be comfortable. Yeah.
So that's pretty much the same as everyone else. They were in meters, but that's pretty close to what everyone else
did. I mean, that's a lot faster if you're doing 120 meters.
I know they said 130. They're doing 130s.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah.
So 10 seconds more.
Yeah.
Another tip that I found out at the very end of my triathlon career.
Yeah.
Very slow. Very slow.
It's just
swimmer.
Paused. It's not.
It just paused. Yeah.
Just paused. Yeah.
But this is for other people who are getting better at swimming. What I noticed is that, and I hadn't heard anyone else talk about this till a coach saw me and he videotaped me and it was horrible, is that when I would go to breathe, my feet would spread apart.
Yeah.
And I'd like have this kind of snowplow action.
Yep.
And he banded my feet together. Mm. Oh, and that was so hard to swim that way. But the top swimmers, their feet are just together all the time. And you see it all the time in the pool. Every breath you get like the snowplow action, it just slows you down. Yep. And
I did that a lot. When I first started swimming, I would do a 2-beat kick. And as I was turning to breathe and my head was like coming completely out of the water and I would go to splay my legs, it was just completely out. And if you take your legs outside of basically your shoulder width, you're just slowing yourself down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's like when you're cycling, like every 3 seconds you put your hands out to the side and you're doing a time trial.
Yeah. Or just even, you know, getting out of the tucked position and lifting your head up.
Every single time
you do that, you're slowing yourself down.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And we learned yesterday that disruption or the effect that has on your aerodynamics, that carries to water and hydrodynamics too.
Yeah.
I mean, the two overlap so much.
Yep.
Each one of those disruptions carries more weight than you recognize because reestablishing the level of hydrodynamics you had prior to that miscalculation or that mismovement is costly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it doesn't come right back to where it was.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that's a really good point. What about open water swimming? Did that pose any new challenges for you versus just swimming in the pool?
Initially, yeah. I think it does to everyone. I guess after the first initial couple races, you get used to it and just mentally treat it. You get in a mental zone. You treat it as you're swimming laps. That's it.
Yeah.
You can't do much else outside of that. you know, one thing that we're working on now that probably won't pay dividends for this race, but hopefully by next year I'll have some good advantages, is we're working on a lot like stroke per minute. So if you look at pros in general, Josh will do, if you count and you look at the videos, he'll do like
Josh Hamburger.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. He'll do upper 80s or low 90s strokes per minute, which is just crazy. That's amazing. I mean, I can't do that for 25 yards.
Yeah.
I think it's
faster than some people's cadence on a bike.
Yeah. That's just one thing you got to get your body used to. Yeah. You know, I don't think they're not more aerobically fit than other professional athletes. Mm-hmm. And their form is probably equally on par, but this dude's able to hold 90 strokes per minute for that 47 minutes or 46 mm-hmm. minutes, or maybe even faster this year.
There's definitely like different schools of thought on that.
Yeah.
I remember I watched a video, I think it was maybe in Australia made it popular, but that high stroke rate, there's like
swim club.
Is that it?
Yeah.
And then there's other people who are like, you got to have the least amount of strokes as possible.
Sure. That's this huge discrepancy. Yeah. And I think you can treat it different depending on the water conditions, right? So if you're in a pool and the waves, the current, those aren't a factor at all, you can do more of the DPS or the distance per stroke, mm-hmm. and you can get that glide. But if there's any component of anything that's working against you, whether it be the current or the waves or the swells,
other swimmers.
You need to keep that momentum going, because mm-hmm. if you, the second that you're doing more of a front quadrant swim or you're trying to glide, that momentum is just getting lost.
Dissipates that much more quickly.
So you want to keep, you know, the quote unquote windmill arms going. So you're constantly going.
Yeah.
Constantly going.
That seems like it would be key, especially like here where you're swimming pretty close to the shoreline.
Yeah.
So the waves are coming in and they're pushing you in. So, I mean, if you are stalling your momentum, you're just going to be drifting laterally, right?
Yeah.
Like it's going to be want to be pulling you away.
Yeah, it'll get you for sure. They have some cool information on their website, and they have like graphical depictions.
Swim smooth.
Yeah, they have mm-hmm. depictions of a couple top athletes. I think they have Brownlees up there, and where they're at strokes per minute. Everyone's different based off of anatomy, right? One thing they talked about is your ape index, and that's how far your arm span is above your height.
Above my height.
Yeah.
No, I don't have.
you'll be probably 3, 4, 5 inches. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you try it out, test it out later. I think I'm like maybe 3 or 4 inches taller than my height.
Yeah.
And you'll have naturally a slower cadence than other people.
You have longer arms.
Correct. Correct.
There's in my mind, I don't know if this is right, but I think of that slow and smooth is great for like beginners, because mm-hmm. they kind of get in the pool and they can get overexerted and scared. And then as you get to be a faster swimmer and want to really swim fast, it's the higher cadence stuff, and you kind of have to change your technique. But I mean, if you're an adult swimmer, it's hard to tell them to get in the water and go 90.
Yeah, slow and smooth is perfect for technique driven focus. Like there's catch-up drills, mm-hmm. which is basically exemplifying swimming slow. You're just taking everything one step at a time. I think that's perfect. And I usually warm up and do drills like that.
It's the same with swimming or running and riding too.
Yeah.
You have to learn the proper technique slow, where you can manage it and see it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the speed comes up or the turnover with time.
And even doing things like, you know, form drills with running. Your body is kind of like in the water, for instance, it's got to be like a torpedo. It's got to be rigid and straight. It can't be like a banana, which is rigid technically and not straight. And it can't be like a noodle, which is could be straight and, you know, not rigid. And you need those components. So that's why doing things like form drills, where if you're swimming fast or if you're running really, really fast, probably a little bit faster than VO2, but for very short periods of time, your body naturally takes that rigid shape.
Yeah.
And while you're running, it takes that natural good posture. You're upright. You know, you're everything's working together. So things like that help.
Mm-hmm. What are there any running drills that you like?
Yeah, I was just going to say, let's transition into running and focus on that for a bit.
Yeah. There aren't really too many drills that I've experimented with. I do like just those fast pickups. I think that, you know, I'll incorporate some of those in. I got a book by Bobby McGee. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Bobby McGee.
He coached one of our employees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's a very fast runner. Very fast.
Yeah, he was at the Olympic Training Center for a while.
He's our employee's a very fast runner.
Yeah. Bobby McGee's a famous
experienced
run coach.
Yeah,
I think he made some videos and I subscribed to him, but honestly, I've just been so overwhelmed with everything else. I haven't had a chance to sit down and take a look at those.
You do your homework, though. I mean, you clearly.
Yeah, I think most of my homework has been revolving around cycling and swimming so far.
Yeah.
The best sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with the run training, did you notice that you came up against any sort of, like, when you first started in triathlon, did you find yourself unable to drop down below a specific pace and change something that then helped you drop below that kind of threshold? Or did it just kind of come naturally and your pace is what it was before? How have you improved, in other words?
If we're running.
Yeah.
So I think everything is about the same. So with swimming, with biking, and with running, you have to hit. The training is very similar, right? There's no secrets to training. You just have to be progressive and build off the previous week that you've done and recover correctly and incorporate some intensity, but at a lower volume. Mm-hmm. But doing those VO2 type of sets, mm-hmm. in all three disciplines, doing the tempo-based type of efforts where you're, 80-85%, yeah. And then doing the long aerobic stuff. That's where you have to do all three of those, and you have to build off them correctly. So with running, that's kind of where I had a lot of my gains from, and I think that right now it's probably my weakest of the three. But when I was initially starting, I think my first triathlon, I was maybe doing 8:30s off of an Olympic bike.
Got it.
Maybe a little bit slower, but yeah, somewhere around there. And now I'm kind of just over 6.
Got it.
So, but
sick improvement.
That's a huge improvement.
For a marathon.
No, for Olympic.
Yeah, I wish. Yeah, that puts you at the 3-hour mark. Yeah. But I think a lot of that comes from just doing the VO2 work, doing the 3-minute, the 4-minute efforts.
Okay. That makes sense. Let's get into the equipment side of things. Then, what shoes do you run with? We'll work backwards.
Yeah, I actually just snagged a pair of those Nike
Vaporfly 4%.
Vaporfly 4%.
Yeah,
you're fast.
Yeah, you're about to PR. You're gonna blow it up.
Probably not. Yeah. But I tell you what, I don't really care about. And this is not a plug or anything like that because I hated the brand for many, many years. My feet don't get sore in those things. It feels great. We'll see what happens after tomorrow. But
they're really good.
They're comfortable. Yeah, they're comfortable.
I just mentioned in the last podcast, my wife took 10 minutes off her marathon PR wearing those shoes last weekend.
Maybe it'll bring me
the brand new.
Good luck.
Did you get the second version?
No. So I was sitting on my bike in Fort Collins, Colorado, a week and a half ago, and I got the email that they were available. As I was putting my credit card information in my phone, trying to do a trainer road ride, I went to go check out, and it's like, sorry, this is no longer available.
No. Yeah, they're quick.
Yeah, it was crazy. And now they're only available in size men's 3, which is ridiculous.
They totally.
That's crazy, men's 3.
Yeah. You have to be a ninja to get those.
Yeah, pretty much.
When you run, do you wear on headgear? That's a big point of the last podcast. Are you a visor, sweatband, or hat type of guy?
I usually do either a hat or a headband, sweatband.
Yeah. What kind of hat?
Just like the stuff that you get from races.
Yeah, so like trucker
hat. Like a race hat.
Oh, not anything like this. I'm wearing a trucker hat right now. Yeah, but it's a race hat.
Okay.
Gotcha. Do they make you hot? They make me feel hot. No, the race hats.
No.
No, okay.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
They have a little bit of a sweatband around them, so they kind of absorb everything. It only lasts for about 30 minutes before you're having to wring it out again, but...
Socks or no socks on the run?
For this weekend?
Yeah.
Socks.
But not all the time?
I think, so for me, I do half Ironman and Ironman, socks. Anything shorter than that, no socks.
Got it. Yeah. Got to keep the feet.
Are you on the run? Are you putting anything underneath your hat?
Constantly.
For temperature management?
Yeah. I usually do ice, every single aid station, ice, hat back on. One of the biggest, when I did Boulder, it was amazing. I mean, I wish every single race had this, but they were handing out these tube socks full of ice. Yeah. And I unzipped my kit a little bit, tossed it around my shoulders, tossed it back over, zipped it back up. And the thing lasted forever. It was amazing. And every single aid station after that, I was asking for the tube sock ice. And they're like, they looked at me funny. They're like, what are you talking about? There was only one aid station. I think at like mile 3 that had it.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah. Like it's common that we see in the cycling world is they fill nylons with that. And then they put that on their back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good tactic.
Yeah.
What about, do you run with any race belt or anything like that for nutrition or hydration?
No, I carry these 3 little flasks. Mm-hmm. That I did for Boulder, at least. That's kind of where I first experimented it, and I just kind of concentrated my nutrition. And I have it worked out to where I'm going to take in about between 1.3 and 1.5 liters per hour.
Got it.
And then I have my specific calories and sodium needs in that one bottle. So every 15 minutes, my watch goes off, finish a quarter of it. I have one flask per hour.
And how much sodium and how much nutrition is in there?
Yeah, so... one big thing for me was I fell victim to serious debilitating cramps the whole last year and the year before that.
Are you listening, Chad?
I'm on top of it, man. Yeah. Figuring it out.
Yeah. Actually, Chad's right now, not cramped in a while now.
You guys had podcasts about this before, and it could be a whole separate podcast in and of itself. Hear it.
Everyone wants it.
But for me, so last year was horrible. It was just the absolute worst long course year ever. I had like tetanic contractions where my quad and my hamstring at the same time, mm-hmm. I couldn't do anything, sat there on the side of the road, my leg was completely locked up, and just I'm just going the whole entire time.
Yeah.
And your race is over. Like, I pulled out of Ironman Wisconsin, or not Ironman, the half Ironman Wisconsin, because that just happened. I couldn't run off of it. So I kind of went back to the drawing board at the end of the last season, and before I started training for Boulder, I said, all right, I'm going to attack these three things. I'm going to train better and train smarter. Trainer Road.
Do you use Trainer Road?
I do.
Yes. Of course he does.
You guys don't know this, but no. The 20th of this month, it's our 1 year anniversary, guys.
Hey, okay. There we go. That's awesome. Yeah.
Big day. Sorry I didn't bring anything like champagne.
Yeah, we'll ship something for you. Yeah.
But before I did that, I said, you know what? I'm going to start paying attention to my fluid intake. And I did some testing with most of the trainer rides that I did. I said, I'm going to try tempo rides and the long aerobic stuff. I weighed myself before, after, managed all the fluid, and figured out I'm losing somewhere around like 1.5 for the easier rides to up to 2 liters an hour for the harder rides. And I got some testing done both by Precision Hydration. They're a company that have some facilities or some sites out.
Yeah,
all throughout the U.S.
Yeah.
And then I just did Gatorades yesterday. Hmm. Gatorade here in the expo was offering free testing.
Oh. How did it match up?
It was close. Yeah. So Precision had me losing 1,200 milligrams of sodium per liter. Yeah. And then per liter of sweat. And then Gatorade was having me lose 1,421. So pretty close.
Yeah. How did they test you?
Quite a lot, too.
They had two little pads that you put on your forearms, and then you rode at whatever pace you wanted to. They said they recommended an Ironman pace for 30 minutes. I think that made the 30 minutes made it easier for them to calculate the sweat loss because they just doubled it. They weighed you before, weighed you after. Yeah. But the pads were saturated within 10 minutes. They ripped them off, and then they put them in their little pipettes and or little.
Did you just ride a trainer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. Uh-huh. Ooh, I wonder if we could do that tomorrow.
Sure.
That would be totally cool. Yeah. Chad's got a. No, he doesn't want to. I want to do it.
I want to do it. I don't want to do it tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hopefully, the expo will still be open tomorrow and Sunday. Or
yeah I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll try to do it.
Yeah, go talk to him. The guy that helped me out, his name was Adam.
Cool.
Nice guy. Yeah.
Nice.
And they're based out of Chicago. They're 25 minutes away. We were just talking back and forth because, he's real close to where I'm at.
Cool. Local guy.
Yeah, local guy.
We're going to jump back to nutrition soon. Sure. But what bike are you riding?
I currently have a Felt IA2.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay. So that's their full on. That's their.
That's actually known to be pretty good in Kona because it's good in with like a high yaw, fast
yaw
on
angles. Sure.
Yeah. On a crosswinds.
Comparatively speaking, at 0 degrees yaw, it's not like a standout, but it does really well with crosswinds.
Yeah.
Yeah. What size frame do you ride, and then how tall are you?
I ride a 54.
Okay.
I don't know, 5'9".
5'9", awesome.
5'8".
Do you know your inseam, roughly?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No. 32,
31? Around 32, 31
inches. 39?
Yeah. So that's just about my size, too, then. What do you use for helmets?
I currently ride a Smith.
Okay. Yeah, got it. That one looks, it's kind of like the Cask Bambino, kind of like the Pox Cerebel. Yep.
It's a road era helmet,
stubtail.
No, it's a TT helmet. When the stubtails were becoming popular, 2 years ago, it's kind of when it came out.
Vented pretty well, I'm guessing.
What's that?
Vented pretty well.
No.
So what made you choose that?
I covered up the vents.
Oh, you made it.
Even for this race?
Yeah.
Arrows
you don't get hot? Did we ask him? Did he do this race before?
You covered up the vents.
First time.
First time.
This is the first time Kona qualified.
Can you rip off the vents if you need to?
Yeah, I can.
Rip off the tape?
I mean, either way, I've rode with them and rode without them covered.
Yeah.
And I drench sweat either way. It's just pooling in my lens and unavoidable. So
yeah. So a lot of people choose the Aero Road helmet here at Kona because of the heat.
Yeah.
How did you come to that decision to not use an Aero Road helmet versus this one?
How long do we have?
However many.
You can cut out anything that's not interesting, so go for it.
Well, I mean, I've heard a lot of, correct me if I'm wrong, right? Yeah. But I've heard a lot of misconceptions and people thinking that, oh, this raises your core body temperature, because as you're growing up, everyone always says, oh, you lose heat through your head, make sure you cover your head, et cetera. But in all reality, you know, you lose heat through all the rest of the areas of your body as well.
Yep.
Anything that gets blood flow.
Exactly, exactly.
Pushes it to the skin.
So I think it might potentially raise your rate of perceived exertion if you're, you know, you're sweating at all.
Your
but
head is hot.
I just haven't had a problem with it at all. Yeah. I haven't.
So last year we had a dinner with Crowey, and he said he did a test between two different helmets and put like something like a sensor there. And he said there was no difference in temperature between remember that?
Yeah. He said that it was, if we were talking about that, like the whole point of that conversation was that, you know, it screws with your mind, right? Yeah. Like in your mind, you think it's more. I mean, Jan uses and or has used, he's not obviously this year, but he uses a full TT helmet, not an aero.
Seen a lot
helmet.
Of people with full TT helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although today I had a Prevail, which is specialized like super airy helmet. And I was like, this feels amazingly hot. You know what I mean? It's just a hot day.
Hot day.
Yeah.
Hot
just, weather, everything's hot. So you, I could see how you could
misattribute it to the helmet.
You said it so much better than I was going to.
Okay. But I could see the difference.
What kit are you, a sleeves or sleeveless guy on the
sleeves.
Bike?
Sleeves.
Okay. Nice. Because
I'm
of arrow.
I'm on the sleeve bandwagon. Everyone else is doing it.
Sleeves to your elbow or full sleeves?
No, I'm kidding. Sleeves to the elbow.
Okay.
Nice.
Have you ever seen anyone with sleeves, like full sleeves on?
Yeah, they put them on.
Oh, there's some people, arm coolers.
The arm coolers,
Yeah. And there's some people that will just stay covered just because of the sun.
Yeah.
Like a full white kid, they'll actually have a whole mask.
Yeah. They look like they were like a paper mache, just covered in sunscreen everywhere.
Yeah. We saw a couple of guys riding the other day.
Whatever is needed for the sun, right? What brand is your kit? And I don't know if you've tested different ones and arrived. Is it a two piece or a one piece?
It's a one piece.
Yeah,
it's a one piece. My brand is, it's called Woom.
Okay.
You've probably never heard of it.
How do you spell that?
W-O-O-M.
Okay.
Yeah, I met this guy. My wife and I did Cozumel Half last year. Okay. It's kind of like a destination, a little bit of a relaxing race. And I had horrible cramps there, by the way. But I walked the run. It was bad. We met a couple people that, and this was his company, and he's based out of Brazil. And he said, hey, man, check this stuff out. And he showed me a kit. Actually, I was able to test it out for a while. And then we had some custom kits made and just rocked them all season. And I like it. I tried some other kits before that. I had like two times you. I had a Wadi Ink kit, and the price point on them and the quality, I mean, the quality's there, and the price point was way cheaper than anything else. So
nice.
Yeah, even from a custom kit standpoint.
Yeah. Wow. So yeah, that's awesome.
Noted.
Yeah.
What shoes do you use? Do you use tri shoes or road shoes?
I use tri shoes.
Which ones?
The current shoes that I have are the Louis Garneau.
Louis Garneau.
Yeah, the Garneaus. The old ones, though, not the brand new ones that are at the expo.
Got it.
Yeah, I had the ones I had before then were the TriFly 3s.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it. Yeah. Are you tall sock or short sock?
When I ride?
Yeah.
I'm going sockless on the ride tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Why is that?
I don't know, I just like it.
Okay.
Are you going to mount and then put your feet in?
Yeah.
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 So your shoes are on your pedals already?
Correct.
Got it. Yeah. Which, I mean, makes sense. He's very comfortable on a bike, right?
Right. Sure. And talkless.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll do the flying leap, even though it's an Ironman.
Do you clip in?
Do I clip in?
Yeah, I'm just joking.
Yeah.
You're in flat pedal.
Right, flat. I've often thought about riding and doing like a triathlon in flats.
Yeah. Converse.
With something. Yeah.
Just some Hokas.
Watching the looks that I get.
That'd be funny.
Yeah.
Tires.
Yeah, tires. Let's talk about tires and wheels.
Sure. The tires that I use, the ones that I have on, are the Continental TTs.
Okay.
Cool. Those are fast tires.
What size?
23s.
23s. Front and rear?
Front and rear.
And are you running, so those are tubed, right? You're not running
latex.
Tubulars? Okay. Latex tubes.
Latex tubes.
What rims? Rims.
So I have an 808 in the rear.
Mm-hmm.
And then I brought an 808 for the front, but I'm going to ride a 404 for the zips.
Yeah.
Got it.
Smart.
I mean, I was out there. I was down LE the first day we got here, and I took the bike out. It wasn't windy down there. I went and cruised the Queen K, and even on some of those, it didn't feel windy, But then you'd hit the descents.
Yeah.
It, -3, -4, you're going probably almost 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And if you have anything that grabs you, it just feels like someone's grabbing your tire and doing this. So
yeah,
I'm just going to do the 404. I best bike splitted it, and it might save you 58 seconds or a minute over the course of an Ironman to ride an 808. But all the extra energy that you're going to spend fighting your bars or having to sit up and stabilize the base bars.
The brakes once and it's all gone. Yeah. Just once.
Exactly. So I think the smarter decision is a 404. And I've seen a lot of pros posting stuff, and they're riding 404 in the front, 808 in the back.
I don't see anybody riding anything bigger than a 40.
Too deep.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Maybe a couple people, but it's definitely not.
It's really rare.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You usually see the top athletes, honestly, on a slightly shallower wheel than you might expect for a typical Ironman bike leg, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a power meter? Yes.
Yeah.
Which
one? A
Cork. Cork. Awesome. One of the D0 ones? One of the new ones?
Is that the newer one? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of power is your goal to? And do you know what power you held when you qualified, and what kind of power are you going to do here?
Yeah. So when I did Boulder, leading up to it, it was 95 degrees on race week.
Whew.
And mentally going into this race that I've worked so hard for, and then it was just like mentally debilitating, because it was an unknown. I can't race well in the heat.
Yeah, thinking about cramps?
Yeah, that's all I thought about. I woke up in the middle of the night like, oh no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And going into it, I had the elevation. So of course, anything over 3,000 feet, every 1,000 feet over 3,000, you decrease by 3% if you're not acclimated, and it's maybe a little bit less if you're acclimated. So I took it down by 6% right off the bat. So instead of riding around 74, I was riding 68 IF, right?
Yes, your intensity.
So then I said, it's going to be hot. I'm going to be sweating a lot. I'm going to take it down even further. And that strategy worked for me. My normalized power was somewhere around 195.
Uh-huh.
And one of my other goals was, I'm not going to have the fastest bike split in my age group. Because I've had plenty of races where even 70.3 Ohio last year or the year before, I rode it's a flat course, first of all. Yeah. So before I say this, it's flat, pan flat.
Yeah.
I rode a 209.
Sheesh.
And that was 2.5 minutes faster than the guy who won the entire race. Yeah. So looking back, I said, you know what? I'm done with this.
How'd that run go?
It was slow. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I ran the whole thing. I didn't fall apart. I was cramping though. Mm-hmm. And I think that was more of a fluid and hydration.
Yeah.
So I've yet to have a really good run off of an endurance effort. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you have a normalized power goal for race day, or do you have like limits that you're setting for yourself in terms of you don't want to go over X or?
Yeah. So I use best bike split.
Yep.
I think this day and age, I mean, it's.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Why wouldn't you?
Although we did hear about a prolific pro that shall remain nameless.
Oh, yeah.
Two days prior to the race was like, hey, I need to figure out my race plan. So,
geez.
She just sent a standard support ticket.
She? gotcha.
Down a bit, but yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big field.
Yeah. Very big field. So you do that.
I use best bike split. And I think we were talking about this before as well, is I'm going to use the same tactics as I did in Boulder. I'm not going to try to knock anything out of the park. I'm going to go have a smooth bike, stay with and ride within myself and not exceed what I'm supposed to.
Yeah.
And I just want to come off the bike and feel refreshed.
Yeah.
You know, for Boulder, I was lucky enough to have my brother give me splits through the Ironman app. And he was able to tell me like, hey, the guy in fourth place is like 10 minutes behind you. So I was able to enjoy it.
Mm.
I was stopping at aid stations, going backwards through them to get some stuff I wanted, then going forwards again. And I think after about mile 3 or 4, I stopped at about every single aid station. And I put a significant amount of time in my marathon. I ran a 3:42. So we'll see how I feel when I come off the bike tomorrow and hopefully not stop.
Yeah. So going slower, like you said, 0.68 or even lower for intensity factor in Boulder.
Yeah.
You then had a great run. Like you felt really good.
I felt great. I got off the bike and he was running with me. My brother was running with me getting video and pictures. He's like, hey man, how you feel? I'm like, I feel good. Awesome. This is weird.
Yeah, like kind of nervous good. To say it because you felt,
I didn't want to.
Do you feel like you left a little money on the table on the bike?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Without a doubt. Yeah.
You
without
must
doubt.
Be super aero because that's a fast, you're super aero, right?
Yeah. I worked on it. Yeah.
What'd you do to work on it?
So I have really long arms for whatever reason. I mean, I think proportional to my body. And with that, I couldn't get my front end low enough. You guys talked about going up, forward, and down, right?
Yeah.
And I had the felt IA, it's great if you want to go up. It's horrible if you want to go down. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like buying the other stem that they have. It's like 200 and something bucks. And then buying a new base bar and aero bars. So I ended up configuring the front end to where I was able to put my cups basically on the base bar. And wow. It puts me in a perfect position. It's probably the most comfortable position I've been in as well is there. Yeah. So
you got a low front end then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just try to go low, or did you like play with other positions or look at your power?
A little bit of everything. Yeah.
And do you happen to know ballpark CDA?
No.
Okay.
No.
It'd be interesting to find out.
How much of your training is in the aero position?
I do all my long aerobic stuff in the aero position. Intensity stuff on the base bar.
Got it.
Yeah.
But on your TT bike?
Yep. I mean, I don't have any other bikes besides my mountain bike and my BMX bike.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea for triathletes if you want to focus on one sport. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you're going
to
ride.
So when I worked at the bike shop and I had the bike shop discount, the pro deals, I mean, it was great to, I had a road bike and I had some other stuff as well. But I'd be on my bike on the trainer on my triathlon bike, just staring at my road bike. And whenever it came down to it, it's like, should I ride the road bike or the TT bike? And I just rode the triathlon bike.
Yeah, because you should.
Yeah, so then push come to shove, and I ended up selling the road bike, and now I'm regretting it. So yeah. Eventually I'll have a road bike again.
Yeah. One other thing, I guess, with the bike is you mentioned your nutrition on the run. Is your nutrition changing on the bike? Like, how are you going to take in food and calories and everything?
Yeah, so it's very similar, right? So I know I'm gonna do about the same thing I did for Boulder. I took in about 260 calories an hour. I'm replacing 1.5 liters per hour, and my stomach handled that extremely well. I actually had to do a little bit more in Boulder, and I was fine because by mile 60 or 70, I realized I didn't pee yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 4 sips. I have 2 concentrated bottles that last me 2 hours each, and I have one smaller aero bottle and aero, what's the brand? X-Lab. Yeah, yep. On the seat stay. So that lasts me an hour. So 2 bottles that are concentrated, and each one is about 260 calories per hour. And then with 1.5 liters, whatever it works out to be, it's like, you know, over 2,000 milligrams of sodium or about per hour.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing. Something similar for the run, a little bit less fluids on the run because I'll probably match pretty close to what I'm losing on the bike.
Yeah.
So with that, I don't have to take in as much on the run, and we'll play it by ear.
How funny is it? Like, I'm just thinking about this. Like, all of the people that we've had on the podcast this week, you know, the trainer road users, so this is a shameless plug here, but they're trainer road users, right? Like,
yeah.
They're people that are like very, I guess, inquisitive and focused about getting the most out of their performance. And every one of them has known like the amount of sodium they're taking in, the amount of carbohydrate, exactly how that's going to happen.
And the amount of fluid. It's
the current frontier. Everyone's recognized that this is vital to proper performance.
Yeah. I think it's a huge component. I mean, you talk about all the elements of triathlon, for instance, and you're swimming, you're biking, you're running, you're recovering. And then nutrition. Nutrition's mm-hmm. huge. Yep. I think for some people, some long course athletes, they don't have a problem with nutrition. Like my wife, for instance, she wanted to get her sodium tested. She's never had a cramp a day in her life. She's got some Eastern European blood. I don't know what they did over there, but she never cramps. She never gets sore, right? So we tested her. We ended up testing her because she wanted to do it. I did it. And of course, she wants to do it. And she only loses like 400 milligrams of sodium per liter.
Yeah,
I wish I had that. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I get done with a race, I am just caked in salt.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, but to go a little deeper, Chad, you said like it's the new frontier, but I guarantee you the majority of people out there do not have a clue. Like, well, and I mean out there at Kona, you know.
I was going to say the opposite for triathletes. It's not the new frontier. They've been obsessing about this for years and years and years.
Frontier,
but even,
And road, it's kind of like Aero Road. Yeah. Triathletes have been so obsessed with Aero for so long.
Yeah.
And now Aero's like, big in road in the last 3 or 4
sure.
years.
Yeah. So it's kind of, but it's just cool to see that like you guys are so focused on those details. It does make,
because they matter, difference. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's huge. Okay. I hopefully we'll see what happens next year, but I think with this new fluid hydration thing going on, we'll hopefully have some good races. So
what wetsuit do you use?
Well, not for this one.
Yeah. Roka.
Oh yeah. Roka. But in general, you're going to have like a skin suit on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Which Roka came out with a sleeved one. I think it's called a Viper X, something along those lines. Since the one I got last year, they came out with maybe like 2 other models, and I don't know what the improved, but yeah, it's the one with the sleeve, so it'll cover my sleeved skin.
Cool.
Got it. Okay. So we kind of, and we're going to get back into like your pre-race nutrition.
Sure.
In a bit, we kind of buried the lead with this one, because what makes you so unlikely or perhaps unique in this case is that you have been training to qualify for this while going through residency, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, how is that possible?
Because that's, so how many hours roughly were you putting
insert in? Insert the plug for my wife for, here.
Yeah.
So I was roughly, I just got done with residency in June. Okay. And I was working, every single week was different, but I would probably work 5 to 6 days a week. And I'd be at the hospital when I was working anywhere between 11 and 14 hours.
Jeez. Wait. Yeah. When did you train?
What's your weekly volume?
Yeah.
It was up there. Yeah. It was definitely up there. I used a high volume plan.
Where did you sleep? When did you sleep?
I would sleep, and this is horrible. I don't recommend this to anyone, but I would sleep anywhere between probably 5 to 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I had naps. Naps are great. Nap when you can.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, crazy. You learn to do that as, you know, going through residency and everything else to grab.
Yeah. I mean, I've been used to it for so many years that, I mean, through college and medical school and then residency, you're just at a state of sleep deprivation. So I think maybe I was used to it. I'll probably look like I'm 60 when I'm 30 or whatever, but yeah.
You used a high volume trainer road plan?
Correct.
Which one?
The
full distance.
Yep.
Full distance plan.
Cool.
That's seriously impressive. Did you?
That's a lot of training.
Like, I assume there were plenty of times where you had to work nights too, I would assume.
Yeah, and for me, I got better workouts when I was working nights. I don't know if it's just my circadian rhythm or what was going on, but, oh, and also too, it helped a little bit as the shifts in the hospital for the nights were a little bit, they're about an hour less.
Okay.
So you technically gain an hour's worth of training when you do that. But I would go in for the night shift, work till 7 o'clock in the morning, maybe get some charting done, go home, sleep for a couple of hours, because I can never sleep for a full 8 hours after a night shift. Yeah. I don't think too many people do.
Wound up, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd sleep for probably 4 to 5 hours, and I'd naturally wake up. I would get a workout in, eat a bunch of food, probably get another workout in, go back to sleep for at least an hour or two before a night shift again.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is motivation and dedication.
Heck yeah, it is. That's right.
Some people struggle.
How did you maintain that? Because I'm sure you struggled with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was days that were hard, but you just got to do it. I think one thing that helped out a lot, and I think it might even helped out in a training principle or training standpoint in general, you guys talked about how, say, for instance, if you did a 40-minute ride at your FTP, it's the same TSS as doing 4 by 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So same thing with doing, you got two workouts a day. You have a swim and you have a bike. Mm-hmm. You can do the swim at 6 o'clock in the morning. Do your bike at 6 o'clock at night. Different physiologic TSS than doing the swim, doing the bike immediately after. And I was just used to doing almost all my training sessions like that. I would do my long swims on Sunday, get out of the pool and do my 3-hour run or whatever my long run was.
Pretty depleting.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it helped on race day.
No, I mean, considering what you do, it's right in line with the demands. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty tough.
Yeah. All these people are like trying to get muster up to do 3 rides a week.
I know, right?
You know,
I feel like it's pretty serious
underachiever. Yeah, exactly.
I think the one ride that I would potentially use as a little cushion if I needed to kick it out would be like Pettit on Friday.
Yeah.
And
like if you're excessively tired or like a really rough shift, something like that.
Would you replace a ride with Pettit?
If I could. I would just ride Pettit on a different day. I wouldn't replace it with a different ride, but that was my ride where, you know what, it's more of a recovery ride, low aerobic. You're still getting some aerobic from it, but I would just kind of take it out altogether.
Yeah. How would you make that decision about when to do that and when just to train normal?
Yeah, it was just on a weekly basis. Some days you'd have a hard shift and you'd want to get out on 10 or 11 hours and someone comes in and they're crumping like right before your shift's about to end. And you're resuscitating them for an hour and then getting them admitted. Before you know it, you're at the hospital for 15 hours and sometimes training just doesn't happen on those days. Yeah. So, yeah.
Makes my life seem so easy.
I know, right? Yeah.
I mean, you just got to like think that you got to look at the big picture, right? And the big picture is the last weeks, months of accumulative stress. One workout's not going to make or break you. Yeah. And from a type A triathlete, it gets hard to mm-hmm. mentally overcome that. You just get consumed by what you're doing in the data. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's all for fun. You're an age group triathlete and everything's gonna be okay. You'll be fine.
I like that.
You should just, we should cut that out and like people should play that.
They
all the
should
time.
Just play that.
Yeah. On loop.
Soundbite of that. Say, okay.
That and then you just got to do it.
Yeah.
You said that. Yeah. Big. You just got to do it. It's all going
to
be okay.
You want to sleep? Just do it.
Yeah. Should we jump back to nutrition then?
Yeah.
Day before, or maybe, so it is the day before.
Sure.
This is Kona Eve right now, but. you may have started yesterday, I don't know, but like, how have you been starting to change your diet leading up to the race? I don't know if it's drinking or eating. We got some laughs from your brother and friend over
here. They probably said pizza, right? Yeah.
He just about accepted a beer from me.
Yeah.
I was in the other room.
Liquid carbs.
Do you want a beer? And you said yes. And then I think your brother said, no, you can't have a beer.
I don't know. He's going to have to hold me back, but I'm going to the Thank God I'm Not Racing party tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going to at least throw back one.
Yeah.
I have to. Who knows when I'm going to be back here next, so you got to go to it.
Chad drinks some beer and does very well cycling.
You can check that
on my
Strava.
You do
beer and ice cream, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, the ice cream, I've kind of steered away from it.
I'm
peanut butter cups these days. I'll get back to it. It's just a shift.
Okay. Yeah. You try the crazy carb load stuff.
I do.
Okay.
What have you been doing?
Pizza, man.
Just pizza.
Yeah, I love pizza. I eat a lot of carbs. I definitely increase or ramp up the amount of carbohydrates that I take in.
Yeah.
The last couple of days to week leading up to the race, I try to stay well fed.
I have to plug my Strava. If you want to see Chad's drinking this week, Nate Pearson on Strava.
Just being consequently very reserved. Because I'm on film every time.
No, I'll do half of them. Okay. For tonight, because today we're kind of done training. So
training.
I want to talk about what you've been drinking. Have you been taking in electrolytes with water while you've just been obviously not on the bike?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of being out here. There's a lot of insensible losses, right? So you're breathing, you're sweating naturally, even if you can't feel it. It's just if you go outside, that's why most professional athletes, they try to limit the amount of exposure they have or the stuff they do down in the expo and the interviews and whatnot. They try to stay inside. I use EFS. I like it.
Yep.
It's been working for me since I've had these cramping issues. So that's what I've been using. And I'll mix a little bit less of a concentrated amount with maybe a little bit less sodium, but still a lot of sodium leading up to the race a couple days. The day before, I'll do some quote-unquote salt bombs. People have done that with the salt tabs where they'll take, I don't know, depends on the person, but 600 milligrams to a couple thousand milligrams of sodium. And I'll do that in liquid form. I'll take a couple of bottles. I'll do like a couple of bottles throughout the day, a 24-ounce bottle before I go to sleep with 2,000 milligrams of sodium. When I wake up the morning of, I usually wake up about 4 hours before the race. I take in 300 to 400 calories 3 hours before the race, and I take down a 24-ounce bottle with about 2,000 calories of or 2,000 milligrams of sodium in that.
What's the sodium product that you're using and you're mixing into these bottles?
Yeah. Himalayan sea salt.
Nice.
Yep.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, you can get it.
It's very natural. Is it pink too?
It is.
Oh yeah.
It is.
That's very fancy.
Yeah. I believe it's from there too.
So they say.
And we don't know. I believe it.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can pick up a whole bag of that stuff for, $6, $7.
A Sherpa painstakingly mined it from
I know. I got paid 25 cents to grab that bag of salt for you.
And I'm sure.
There's some marketer thinking, we should make that into a product and sell it for $3 a tablet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what about night before? Is there like a typical meal that you have the night before?
I try to do pizza.
Pizza.
Yeah, nice. I try to do pizza, man. Pizza's too good.
What pizza restaurant are you going to go to?
Oh, my God. Humpy's.
Humpy's.
Humpy's has the best pizza.
We'll see you there.
I am convinced. Right. I've heard of some other place, too, on Slow Twitch.
Longboards?
What's that called?
Longboards. That one's another
Someone told us Longboards today, because we want to have pizza tonight, too.
Gotcha. I don't know the name of it. I can look it up on the Kona feed that they had. The guy wrote it on Slow Twitch.
Humpy's is the place.
I would do Humpy's.
Right. Is it like you're from Chicago? What type of pizza is this?
It's not a deep dish. It's a thin crust. It's not New York's big slices, but it definitely is more of like a brick oven type of crispiness. Ooh. Yeah,
I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm. And that
sounds amazing.
I get all my pizzas well done.
Nice.
Well done. Do you order them well done?
Yep.
Toppings?
Ooh, I never thought of that.
I just do
cheese.
Just cheese?
Just cheese.
Wow.
I'm a vegetarian. I like veggies. But I just do cheese.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, then that's a good segue. Yeah, how do you eat normally?
Lots of veggies.
Really? Yeah. What are your protein sources?
Oh God, there's so many. So seitan.
This is wheat.
Tempeh, soy, black beans, legumes. The list goes on. There's a lot of good cookbooks that are out there that we use, especially like in the wintertime. And one thing too, from a nutritional standpoint and working a ton and staying well fed, is my wife and I got into using a crock pot a lot.
So good.
Super easy as far as prep. Most of these recipes that we get in the books, the prep is 15, 30 minutes top. So the day that you have off a week from training or work, which everyone should take a day off of training just to decompress, you'd use those for your meal prep days. And you'd make a big pot, if not, sometimes we make two pots of this crock pot, whatever it is. Yeah. And then we package it up or we grab it on the go. And it's just so much easier to have that done, because when push comes to shove and you're running out the door and you don't have anything made, you're probably going to get some junk food from the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And
yes.
It's the easy grab. Yeah. Yep. So you mentioned you have a wife. You have kids?
No kids.
Okay. And what does your wife do? You said, is she?
She's an ICU nurse.
Oh, okay.
Holy cow. She's busy too.
She's busy.
That sounds busy.
Holy cow, man. That's busy.
For those crockpot things, do you have any links to recipes?
I can send you links to the books that we use.
That'd be great, because I'll put that on the forum.
People can go to forum.trainerode.com and we'll have a post specifically for your podcast, and then people can check that out.
Yeah. I want to try some of those.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What about morning of? What's your typical race morning meal? And how long before the race start will you eat it?
Yeah, so my morning of is I usually make two pieces of toast or a bagel, something like whole wheat bagel. But the bread that we like to eat, that I don't know if you guys know about, is the Ezekiel bread.
That's what I do too.
Yeah.
So, amazing. I mean, that's the way bread should be, right?
Yeah.
It tastes kind of grainy.
Hardy. But it's good though.
Mm. Oh man, it's so good. So everyone out there, the bread that you should be getting is not on the shelves. The bread that you should be getting is in the frozen food section. Because if you leave that stuff out on the counter for more than a couple of days, it'll get moldy.
Yeah.
Because there's no preservatives in it. So if you look at the back of your ingredients and your food and you don't know what that stuff is, you should not be eating it.
And
if
there's five or six.
Yep, exactly. The general rule of thumb is if there's more than five or six ingredients, don't touch it.
Ezekiel has seven.
But it's like,
they're all identified.
Yeah, exactly. And then salt, I think.
Yeah,
but it's good. It's seven high, it's like whole grain, seven different types of grains, I think, or plants or something like that.
And the KTH, I believe, that's the local grocery store, KTA, I think, they have it. So,
oh, really?
Yep. Yeah, they have it.
Do you ever, we gone on a tangent. Toast and then what?
Toast and just heapfuls of peanut butter.
Okay, toast and peanut butter.
Toast and peanut butter.
Do you do the Ezekiel cereal ever?
Not even tried it.
It's dude.
Really?
Yeah. That is my go-to race morning or anything cereal. Because you can pack it too. Sorry, I get so excited. You can pack it in your suitcase.
Awesome.
And it's kind of like a grape nuts, and you can put fruit in it too if you want, but it's the same exact ingredients as the bread.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We'll try it.
Almond milk makes it nice.
Don't try it tomorrow, please.
Yeah.
So you're vegetarian, nothing new. Not vegan, so you drink dairy?
I don't do dairy. We do mostly soy and almond milk, but I'll do, we'll do eggs still.
Got
we
it.
Try to get the cage free eggs and whatnot. And I got a buddy back at home.
Maine,
yeah. Who knows? But I got a buddy.
What's the chicken's name?
Yeah. I got a buddy at home who's got
Portlandia plug.
Ducks and chickens, and we get a whole bunch of eggs from him all the time. So I feel a little bit better about that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I guess what other things, is there anything else that you feel like we've left out?
I think we've covered it. Oh, what's your number?
2054.
Oh, I thought it was just 2-0. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
And who's going to win?
Predictions.
Oh, God.
Pro.
I know.
Yeah. Go women's side first.
Women's side first. Danielle's gonna win.
Yeah, it's hard to bet against her.
It's hard to go against that.
It really is. Like, she's such a strong athlete in all disciplines. It's just tough.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the next couple of years, it's going to be interesting. The dynamic that Lucy adds to the table is just, I mean, her bike's getting strong. Like, you saw what happened at 70.3 Worlds.
Yep.
She was biking with Danielle the entire time, and her run's getting stronger as well. Every single run and race that she's had, she's gotten faster in every single one.
Yeah, she's a fun one to watch.
And she's 24.
Yeah.
That's really young for Ironman.
Yeah, it's exciting.
I don't know how old she is.
I think she's like 28 or 29.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah, don't quote me, but yeah.
How about the men's race?
It's tough. I'm not going to claim anything, right?
Yeah.
Well,
this is all fun.
I'm partial Sanders.
Okay.
Just because he's so transparent with his training, but
is he really though? I always wondered that.
Yeah. Right. Is he sandbagging?
Exactly.
Is he
actually? Yeah. Just throwing us off the scent, right?
Who knows? Yeah. But You just can't bet against Gomez.
Yeah. That's what I said, Gomez.
Yeah, so Nate's
Everybody
going for him.
Wants Gomez to win.
Yeah, it'd be super really cool. Yeah, well. Not Lionel. He's yeah.
yeah. Lionel's mom. Yeah.
Had Jan not been injured, or...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I would say it's a coin flip between Frodo and Gomez at that point, if he wasn't injured.
Yeah.
Because Gomez is coming out in the front pack, if not, you know, I mean, besides Amberger, right?
Yeah.
He's coming out in the front pack. He's going to be able to sit in kind of like Patrick did last year, and then it comes down to the run. It's not doesn't make for an exciting race, but at the same time, Gomez is going to outrun Longo for sure, without a doubt. I mean, the dude's a champion. So
yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, fun to watch. I think it is fun to watch that way.
Well, I'm so upset that I'm racing because I mean, outside of the few little things that I'm going to see him coming down or on the run at turnaround points or whatever, but. I'm upset. Like these guys got it made. They get to sit there and drink beer all day. Yeah, okay. With my father.
We're doing it too.
Yeah,
we're doing it too.
Find them.
Party. Find them. Watching it in the air conditioning.
Smoothies and Aussie bowl.
I mean, it's gonna be
and pizza.
Pizza, beer, and pizza. Maybe some ice cream.
It's gonna be nothing short of a show tomorrow. It's gonna be incredible.
Well, we're stoked to cheer you on. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, man. Anytime. It's been good.
Thank you.
It's been cool to see how like four totally different people. But have a ton of similarities in the sense of like what they've refined and how they're going about things. But you know, each one to their own specific needs. But this has been interesting, man. I'm really excited to see how you do tomorrow. Do you have any sort of aspirations or how are you managing your expectations?
Absolutely not. Cool. It's a victory lap, man.
This is your first time here.
Yeah. How about no cramping?
No, yeah, exactly.
That's it.
It's no cramping. Yeah. You know, it's what it comes down to. I just want to enjoy it. I've been enjoying the island the whole time I was here. I'm going to have a decent swim, treat it as a long training day on the bike, and then come off and just kind of have a good run.
Run it in.
Cool. Yeah. Well, good luck, Mike.
Thank you.
For everybody that wants to learn more, and I don't know if you're a part of the forum yet, but you should check it out. If you're not, you can just use your Trainer Road logins. That's already there. But forum.trainerroad.com, and we'll have a post on this. So if you have specific questions for Mike or anything else like that, he won't be answering them now. Give him a while. He has an important race tomorrow. So,
are you okay answering some questions?
Of course. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool.
And two, you don't need to be a Trainer Road member to use the forum.
Totally.
You can log in with Facebook or create your own account or Google or I think, I don't know, Twitter.
Yep.
Something like that.
So jump in there and ask the questions and Mike will cheer you on tomorrow and hopefully many people from afar listening to this as well.
Cool.
All right. Cool.
Thanks guys. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.